Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph on the second line, Tashma. Nishtaru bo tzitzin ha-makvim et amida. If he has shreds of skin that are left on his mila, harizeh ein ochel, lo b'tshuma, v'lo b'pesach, v'lo b'kodoshim, v'lo b'maaser. So here you have this person who doesn't have a mila, is considered to be an arel, because he has strands of flesh that otherwise make his milah not a milah. He's still considered to be an arel. And his classification as an arel makes it problematic for him with regards to truma, pesach, kodashim, and maaser. Our question, which we started with yesterday, we have yet to find any conclusive evidence to, is what is the din of an arel vis-a-vis maaser? Here we seem to have a braita that explicitly addresses the issue and says that you have an arel that is pasul de gabe maaser. Gemara says, my love, maser de gan. So we're talking about maser de gan, which is what we're searching for here, which is the maser on grains, and maser sheni. Gemara says, lo, maser behema. We're talking about maser behema, which is a korban that is brought up to the mikdash, and would be a subset of kodashim that are mentioned here in the braita. Gemara says, maser behema, hainu kodashim. Why do you need to mention Maaser Behema separate from Kodashim? It says, Uli Tameich, Milo Tanan Pesach, Toni Kodashim. Wait a minute. The Braita also mentions Pesach, which is another subset of Kodashim. So it is delineating pieces of Kodashim separately, so it would not be outlandish to suggest that the Maaser here is Maaser Behema. It says, Bishlamo Pesach Kodashim Tzrichet. When you have Pesach and Kodashim, you have to mention each one of them separately. Ditana Pesach Mishum da Arelut be Pesach Tiva. Because Arelut is specifically mentioned by Pesach, which is V'chol Arel lo yochal bo. So since it's specifically enumerated there, we think it would apply there, Aval Kodashim Eimalo. But by Kodashim, other Kodashim, we would say, not a problem. Vitana Kodashim, it was other Kodashim besides Pesach that were mentioned in the Braita, Avamina, my Kodashim. Well, I would have thought that the definition of Kodashim here is Pesach. So, Eler Maaser Behema Lamali. Why do I have to delineate Maaser Behema separately or distinctly? It says, Ela Maaser Rishon. You forgot about that. There's another Maaser Dagan that this could be that wouldn't be Maaser Shini and still wouldn't answer our question, which is Maaser Rishon. Let us say it's from Maaser Rishon for Rabbi Meir he. And this position, this braita is authored by Rabbi Meir, Damar Maaser Rishon Asur Lezarim. Because he believes that Maaser Rishon is Asur Lezarim, so it has a different type of status than Maaser Sheni. Because Maaser Rishon looks a little more like Truma, in the sense that it's Asur Lezarim, it's a different set of Zarim here, the Maaser Rishon goes to the Levi, whereas the Truma is going to the Kohen. But it's Asur Lezarim, and that's why an Arel would be precluded. But Maaser Sheni, where it's not Asur Lezarim, maybe over there Arel would not be impacted. I says, all right, let's move on to our next attempt to answer this question. Tashma. Miditani Rabbi Chiya bar Rav midifti arel asur b'shtei masrot. So now we have seemingly a statement that is addressing this head on, which is that an arel is asur in both masrot. So my love, echad maser dagan ve'echad maser beima. So what would you think here? That it's talking about maser dagan, which is maser shini, and maser beima. So that way, if you have both masrot covered here, then you are talking about maser sheni, and we're saying that an arel is problematic. Gemara says, "Achanami maser rishon for Rabbi Meir." No, just say it's maser rishon and maser behema, according to Rabbi Meir, who says that it's asur de zarim, and therefore we still don't have an answer about maser sheni, whether an arel is asur. Tashma, okay, another attempt at this. Onain asur b'maser umutar b'truma u'b'para. Ononain is precluded from maser, lo achalti bi oni mimenu. Umutar bi truma wapara. Ononain is not restricted by truma, we've already seen that, which is v'chol zar, zaruta marti lecha v'lo aninut. And also now by para duma, we're suggesting that ononain is not precluded. Tvoyom, asur bi truma, umutar bi para wapmaser. Tvoyom has a problem with regards to truma because he needs Uva Shemesh v'taher, he needs Erev Shemesh in order to eat it. But by Parah Duma and Maaser, it's okay. We're going to see why the Psukim by Maaser talk about the fact that he has to go to the mikveh, not that he needs Erev Shemesh. And by para aduma, we saw before, v'hiza ha-tahor ala tamei, michlal shehu tamei. That the tahor ala tamei was a inference from that, that that tahor wasn't completely tahor, but he was partly tahor, and we said that was referring to etvo yom. Michusar kipurim, someone who has gone to the mikveh, had hair of shemesh, but still has to bring a korban in order to achieve their tahara. Asur bepara, by para aduma is problematic. Umutar v'truma maser. By truma maser, you're fine. Maser only needs tevul yom. Truma only needs herev shemesh. So both of those are mutarim. The korban will not stop them. But with regards to kodeshim, one is precluded from kodeshim with regards to mechusar kipurim. Somebody didn't bring his kapara yet. And by para aduma as well. Vimita, if you are right that there is such a distinction, nitnei arel, asur b'truma, umutar b'para u'maser. If you're looking for things that are true by two of these items, but not the third, this would be another thing, which would be that an arel is precluded from truma, but he is mutar in para and maser. That way you have now a distinction that draws a parallel between para and maser, which says that arel does not affect them, whereas truma is impacted by them, and there'd be another statement. I'm not sure why that the statement would have been true, even if you believe that an arel is sur in maser, you could have said the same thing. You could say para is mutar ba'arel, mashen kein be truma maser. You could have created the same structure, even if arel was asur ba'maser. But the Gemara assumes that if you had this structure, that the first item in the list is asur, and the remaining two are mutar, that it would work out that you could state it this way, which is that truma would be asur, whereas para maser would be mutar. The fact that it doesn't say this implies that maser is also asur be'arel. Where it says, Haitano debate Rabbi Akiva, this braita that we just brought over here is authored by Rabbi Akiva, or someone who follows the shita of Rabbi Akiva, the Mirabile Arel Kitame, who we've seen before, says that an Arel has the equivalence of a Tame, and that's from Ish Ish, which we saw before. How does he know that by Truma, that an Arel is precluded from Ish Ish, which is Mirabe Arel, but that's within the context of Tuma. So he equates an Arel to Tuma. The Tanya, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Ish Ish, the Rabotet Arel. Therefore, it causes a problem over here with regards to Para Duma as well. And it causes a problem for Truma. So therefore you have Arelut that is a problem because of Tuma, not because it's Arel. And the problem for Rabbi Akiva is not that the person is an Arel. The problem is that an Arel is the same as someone who is Tamei. If you're the same as someone who is Tamei, you're precluded because you're Tamei, not because you are an Arel. If you don't believe like Rabbi Akiva that Arel equals Tamei, then you can make statements about the standing of such a position with regards to Arel. But Rabbi Akiva, it's hard to differentiate between Arel and Tuma because for him, they are the same thing. So because of that, if you make Rabbi Akiva the author of this position, it doesn't show you anything. It shows you, yes, that Arel is a sur, but the Arel might be a sur here because he is Tame, not because he is an Arel. So now the Gemara says, Uman Tano de Polig Ale de Rabbi Akiva. Who is the Tano that argues on Rabbi Akiva? So it's Tana de Rabbi Yosef Abablihi. It is, now we're going to go with Rashi's girsa as well as Rashi's understanding, is that it is the Tana Kama of the Breita of Rabbi Yosef Ababli, which we're about to quote, which is the Danya. Srefat onein umchusur kipurim kshera. Rabbi Yosef Ababli omer onein kshera mchusur kipurim psula. So here you have a statement which, according to Rashi, has nothing to do with the question that we have at hand. The Gemara says, who argues on Rabbi Akiva? According to Rashi, who says that Rabbi Akiva here equates Arel to Tamei, who is the one that argues on Rabbi Akiva and says that that's not the case? That by Arel, it's not equal to Tamei, and he argues on Rabbi Akiva on this point. So now the major questions on Rashi are, we already know that there are opinions like that, including Rabbi Eliezer, who argues on Rabbi Akiva with regards to Truma. He learns out the fact that Arel is problematic by Truma from Toshav Sachir, the Gzeir Shava from Korban Pesach. He doesn't learn it out of Ish Ish. So it would have been easy to find a Tana who argues on Rabbi Akiva with regards to this information. So why did the Gemara skip over that? That's one of the questions that's brought up by Tosafot. He says we have other opinions like that. So that's why they don't like the way that Rashi formulates the Gemara. But we'll read the way Rashi says it, and then we'll explain why or how else to look at this. But the question is, according to Rashi, who thinks Arel does not equal Tameh? That's the question. Then we bring a Braita that has nothing to do with Arel. Arel is not mentioned whatsoever, which is Srefat Onein, if by the Ara Duma, if it's done by an Onein, or a Michusur Kupurim, that Tanakama says Kshera. By Ara Duma, that's all fine. Rav Yosef Ababli says, by Onein, it's Kshera, by Michusur Kupurim, it's Psula. Then, Rashi says, we take a leap here, and this is what he says. V'hi heiche, de poliga Michusur Kupurim, just like he argues by Mechusir Kupurim over here and says it's kasher, so too he will argue here on Rabbi Akiva and say that an Arel is kasher. Why he makes such a leap, it's not clear, but that is Rashi's statement here, that the Tanakama of Rabbi Yosef Ababli must be argued on Rabbi Akiva, because he says Mechusir Kupurim is okay, therefore he's also saying that Arel is okay by Parah Adumah, even though Arel doesn't show up here at all. That's the leap that Rashi asks you to make, and that's based on the Girsa that Rashi has in the Gemara, both the Girsa in the Braita, as well as the statement of the Poligale Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva argues on. You can solve this problem, or get out of this problem, by doing one of two things. You can see already the Gra just takes out the Poligale Rabbi Akiva. It just eliminates that piece of the Gemara. You don't have to have somebody who's the Tana that argues in Rabbi Akiva. They just want to know who the Tana is of Parah Adumah, of that Braita, and they're not looking for a Tana that argues on Rabbi Akiva. That's the way the Gra deals with it. The other Rishonim just say that they're not looking for what Rashi states over here. They want to know who's the Tana that argues on Rabbi Akiva with regards to Parah Adumah. Nothing to do with Arel, but to do with Parah Adumah in general. And based on that, that is the argument or what the Gemara is searching for over here. And the Gemara finds that there is somebody in Parah Adumah that disagrees with regards to Tumah. That by Mechusar Kippurim, it is Kshera. So that would be the question. The Re in the Tosvot just tries to say, he speculates. He says, if the Girsa was this way and the Girsa was this way, then it would all make sense. But obviously he doesn't have those Girsa out. He's just speculating based on the possibility of those Girsa out. Then it would work out. If you change the word from Mechusar Kippurim to Arel, and you do it here and in the Gemara in Zvachim, then everything would work out fine. Because then you would have what you're looking for, which is the word Arel in the Braita. But obviously he did it as a speculation because he didn't have a Girsa like that that had Arel in the Braita. And so because of that, that's why everybody's having trouble over here. They're asking who's arguing Rabbi Akiva. The only thing we've seen for Rabbi Akiva is the equation of Arel equals Tumah. Then all of a sudden you bring a Braita that has nothing to do with Arel. And so that's what the difficulty is that's faced here. Again, the other Rishonim suggests that it's talking about who argues on Rabbi Akiva in Parah Adumah, but not the way that Rashi does it through a leap from Mechusar Kippurim to Arel, but simply about Mechusar Kippurim, period. I mean, that the Gemara said that Rabbi Akiva is the author of the Braita that we brought before, that by Mechusar Kippurim, Parah Adumah is a surah. Someone who's Mechusar Kippurim is a surah. Here you have a Braita with a Tana that says Mechusar Kippurim, but Parah is fine. And that's all the Gemara was searching for. Who argues on this point of Mechusar Kippurim? Not who argues on Arel, but who argues on Mechusar Kippurim. And now we have a Braita that says that somebody argues on that. That's the Tanakama who says, Srifat Onein, Mechusar Kippurim is Ksheira. Alright, so now, Ve'af Rav Yitzchak Savar, Arel Asur B'Maser. And also Rabbi Yitzchak believes that an Arel is problematic with regards to a Maser. How do we know that an Arel is problematic by Maser? So the assumption being that Rabbi Akiva clearly thinks that Arel is problematic by Maser, because we assign him the authorship of that previous Braita, where we saw that the Braita did not bring up the issue of Arel, implying that Maser Sheni has a problem with Arel. So to here we have Rabbi Yitzchak, who has another way to get at it. That way we get at it is through Rabbi Akiva, who says that Arel equals Tumah. And that's why he's problematic by Maser. Now Rabbi Yitzchak comes out of it from a different, which is from the word Mimenu. If you remember back on Daf Ayin Aleph, we mentioned this Mimenu, and we said, the Gemara says, oh, we're going to use Mimenu for the Gemara upcoming on Ayin Dalet. Here is the Mimenu that we're going to use it for on Daf Ayin Dalet, and here it discusses the word Mimenu, which appears numerous times by the Korban HaPesach, and numerous times by Maser Sheni. It says, Nemar Mimenu B'Maser, V'Nemar Mimenu B'Pesach. The word Mimenu appears in both places. Ma Mimenu Amur B'Pesach Arela Surbo. Just like the Mimenu by Pesach, which is B'Chol Arelo Yochal Bo, says that an Arel is precluded. Af Mimenu Amur B'Maser Arela Surbo. So too, the Mimenu B'Maser teaches you that an Arel may not partake of Maser Sheni. Mufne. It says it's got to be that one of these is extraneous. Dili Mufne. If it's not extraneous to force the Gzera Shava against logic, Ika Lemifrach. Then you have a logical undermining of that Gzera Shava, which is Mala Pesach Shekein Chayevin Alav Mishum Pigul Notar V'Tamei. That Korban HaPesach is unique versus Maser Sheni, which is that it has aspects of Kodoshim that don't apply to Maser. So you could argue that Pesach is Asur Barel because it has these Chumrot, like Pigul, Notar, and Tamei, which are also all Chumrot that exist by the Korban HaPesach that are not necessarily applicable by the Maser Sheni. And as Tosfot points out, they could have given you the whole list that we mentioned yesterday's daf, which is Pankachas, which is all six items that make Kodoshim distinct. Here it just mentions three out of them, but you could have put the whole list there that makes it different than Maser Sheni. Gemara says, "Lai afnu ye mufne." Gemara says, "Enoch enami." You're right. Truthfully, there is one of these is extraneous, and the Gemara says, "My mufne." Which one? What is this? What is the extraneous word here? So Amar Rava, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, "Tlata mimenu k'tive b'Pesach." The word "mimenu" appears three times by the Korban HaPesach. It appears by the restriction against eating the Korban HaPesach raw, which is al tochlu mimenu na, that's one mimenu. Then it also appears by the parsha of notar by Korban HaPesach, which is lo totiru mimenu ad boker, you're not allowed to leave it over until the morning, va notar mimenu ad boker ba'ish yisrofu. So there you have mimenu twice in the parsha of notar. So three times the word mimenu appears by the Korban HaPesach. Chadu gufe, one is to teach you the din itself. What din? It's not clear here what din it is. Tosafot speculates that the ilokotav mimenu havaminu da matzo to morim tichtav de elkoi. Had it not written mimenu, you would have thought it even applies to the matz and maror, which were mentioned there earlier. That you're not allowed to eat the matz and the maror raw, but not to the korban of Pesach. So mimenu comes to teach you that it's talking about the Pesach itself. V'chad gzera shava. One mimenu is for our gzera shava. V'chad, l'man d'amar, ba'k tuv liten asei achar lo tasei. Third one, which is hanotar mimenu, the leftover from it, which seems to be extraneous, you don't need the word mimenu, that comes to create a parallel structure between this latter half of that pasuk and the first half of the pasuk. The first half of the pasuk says, don't do notar. The second half of the pasuk says, if you leave it over for notar, you must burn it. So now, why does it give you those two things? It tells you, don't do it, and then it tells you, you can burn it. So one day, it's come to teach you that this is the way to rectify the problem. The lotase is don't leave it over. There's an ase which says if you do leave it over, burn it. So that is what we call lav hanitak le'ase. A lav that has a rectification through an ase. So aidi dichtiv notar, tiv nami mimenu. So now, since it wrote the word notar, which was already mentioned previously in the pasuk, it wrote the word mimenu again to keep parallel structure. Which is, lo totiru mimenu, don't leave it over, and then anotar mimenu, which is to keep the parallel structure, because the essay here is referencing the same notar that was mentioned earlier in the pasuk, and that's why the mimenu is written over here. Uluman damar liten lo boker sheni l'sreif fato, according to the other one who says the reason that it's mentioned over here, because it says there, lo totiru mimenu ad boker, v'hanotar mimenu ad boker. That ad boker is unnecessary, because of course, it says there, lo tutuyenu ad boker, v'han notar. You could have written whatever's left over. You would have known that's till the morning. Why do you say ad boker again? Litain boker sheni, to tell you that you get a second morning. What's a second morning? Because Korban HaPesach is brought on the 14th of Nisan, eaten on the night of the 15th of Nisan. The next morning is Yom Tov. So, can you burn the Korban notar on Yom Tov? That's what the pasuk comes to tell you. Boker sheni. You don't burn it on the first morning. You burn it on the second morning, which is Chol HaMoed. That's when you do the burning of the notar, and it teaches you that you're not allowed to burn Kodashim on Yom Tov. Even though Havara is allowed on Yom Tov, nevertheless, the burning of Kodashim is not allowed on Yom Tov, and that's what it means, Litein lo boker sheni. But again, Adi chtiv ad boker, chtiv nanami menu. The same thing again, where there's a parallel structure. Since it says the word ad boker twice, it also throws in the word mimenu, which appears in both places. So according to either Deya, where the second half of the Pasuk is teaching you something, either it's teaching you it's a lav and itak laseir, it's teaching you that you can only burn the notar on Chol HaMoed and not on Yom Tov itself. In both cases, the second half of the Pasuk references the first half, and there's a parallel structure. Because of that parallel structure, the Mimenu is there. So you have three words, Mimenu. One to teach you about the Korban of Pesach itself, one for our Gzeres Shava, and one which is seemingly extraneous again, but it's just because of the parallel structure. Tlata Mimenu Ktivei B'Maser. The word Mimenu also appears by Maser Sheni three times, and that's in Vidui Maser and Pashat Kitavo. It says, Lo Achalti B'Oni Mimenu, Lo Biatri Mimenu B'Tamei, V'Nol Natati Mimenu L'Mate. So they have three times the word Mimenu is used in the Pashat Maser Sheni. Chadu Gufei. Again here, one is the Guf HaDavar, for tells you about the Maser itself. Chadid Rabbi Yabawam Rabbi Yochanan. One is Rabbi Yabawam Rabbi Yochanan, we saw in the latter half of yesterday's daf, about the limud of Lo Biyartim Mimenu B'Tameh, Mimenu Yatam Avir, Aval Atam Avir Shemen Shel Trumah Shenitma. That comes to teach you that even though you can't burn Maser Sheni B'Tum'ah, you can burn Shemen Shel Trumah, that is Tmeyah. So that was the Mimenu is a mute. And then v'chad the Reish Lakish, and one of them is for Reish Lakish. Amar Reish Lakish, Amar Rab Smaya, minayin the maser sheni shenitma. How do you know that when maser sheni becomes tamei shemutar the socho, that you're allowed to use it to anoint oneself with maser sheni that is tamei? Shesher mar, because the pasuk says v'lo natati mimenu lemate. I didn't give it to be used for a mate. Lemateu d'lo natati halachai dumya d'mate natati. Says that I can't use it for a person who has passed away, but if someone is alive, they could use it the same way you would use it for a mate. Well, ezu davar sheshaveh b'chayim u'meitim, what would you use shemen for with regards to a mate? A mate doesn't eat. So what are you going to use shemen for with a mate? Havyomer ezu sicha, you would anoint it. You would put it on the body of the mate. You would put the shemen on their skin. So just like you could put the shemen on the skin of the mate, you could put the shemen on the skin of a chai. So that's the overlap between a mate and a chai, where they would use the shemen in the same way. The pasuk says, don't do this to the mate, implying that you could do it to a chai, that someone who's alive would be fine to do that. And the question in general about why Reish Lakish has this question, which is, how do you know that you're allowed to give Maser Sheni Shnitman Mutar the Socho? Why are you allowed to put it on the body? Over here, the question is, what's the problem? What's the problem with anointing a mate with shemen shel tum'ah? So Rashi over here already quotes the issue, which is shmutal socho afakab de kaimelon. Even though we believe that sicha kishtia, that sicha anointing the body is the equivalent of drinking, that we learned by Yom Kippurim, that sicha is kishtia, and that's why anointing on Yom Kippur has the problem because it's the equivalent of drinking, it's the equivalent of ingesting something. So the same thing over here. If you're sach, if you put oil onto somebody, then that would be the equivalent of drinking it. Now we know for sure that maser sheni, that's tameh, you can't eat it. So now what would be the question? The question is, if you're going to anoint the body with the shemen, it's the equivalent of drinking it, then why should that be allowed? And that's the question that Reish Lakish is really dealing with. How will you know you're allowed to do this despite the fact that sicha is kishtia? That's what Reish Lakish is trying to find in the pasuk, evidence to that fact. That's the way Rashi terms it. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, the sakadatcha dasur mishum shemeva'er bituma. So Tosafot says, no, the problem is that you are now lo bi'artim menu bitamei. You're doing the same thing as bi'ur. Bi'ur, we said it yesterday's daf, bi'ur can manifest itself in different ways. Bi'ur is to destroy it. Bi'ur is to eat it. Either one of those is a consumption of the maser. So here, that's the question. Over here, you're being va'er the oil. You're eliminating the oil, even though it's tamei. But you did make a statement, lo bi'artim menu bitamei. So how do you get overcome that problem? Well, that's because we have another diuk out of the pasuk of lo natati mimenu the mate. The mate, I didn't give it to it, but I did give it to a chai. But then the Gemara says, so matif la mar zutra. So mar zutra says, how do you know that that's the commonality between a mate and a chai is sicha? Ve'im alikach lo aron v'tachrichim. Maybe the issue here is that you're using the monies of Maaser Sheni, or using this item that is tamei with Maaser Sheni, to buy something that is directly needed for the mate, which is aron v'tachrichim. This is along the lines of your question. What happens if you have to heat up the body or do something for the mate? So over here, aron v'tachrichim. Why don't you say that that's what's being spoken about here? So Amar Rav Huna, Breid Rav Yeshua, which is the answer that I said to you before. Mimenu means migufo. You want to use the actual Meiser Sheni for something on the body of the mate. Meaning that there's something that's direct. A direct correlation between the item and the mate itself. Not something where it's a derivative factor, which is you use it to purchase Aron B'tachrichim, which again are not directly on the mate, and are also a derivative of the Meiser Sheni. Rav Ashi Amar, Lo Natati Dumya de Lo Achalti. He says the Lo Natati is in a sequence with also Lo Achalti. Malahalan Migufo, Afgan Migufo. So just like over there, when it says Lo Achalti Mimenu B'tamei, it literally means the Meiser Sheni itself. And it means that the person's ingesting it. So to over here, Lo Natati Mimenu Lemeit, it's also got to be the Meiser Sheni directly. And something that's associated with ingesting, like Rashi suggests over here, that's Sicha and Shtiyah. Where it says, Vakate Mufne Mitzad Echad. Who? That only gives you an extraneous Mimenu on one side, which is by the Korban of Pesach, we have an extraneous Mimenu. So that, Anicha Lamanda Amar Lemeitim Vein Meshivim. When you have Zer Shava that has an extraneous on one side, then you learn it, and we don't bring logical arguments against it. According to one who says, we do learn a such Gezer Shava, but you're entitled to bring logical questions against it. What can you say over here? Now, the easy answer is just to say that Rabbi Yitzchak holds of the Tana that believes you only need Mufne Mitzad Echad. That's the easy answer. The Gemara doesn't do that. The Gemara wants to figure out, even according to the one who says that it's requirement of Mufne, but Snates the Deem, what are you going to do? So when it says, Ach, the Rabbi Abahu, that's which we said we used the Mimenu Ba Maser Sheni to teach us about Rabbi Abahu and Rabbi Yochanan, which was, Lo Biartu Mimenu B'Tamei, to teach you only by Maser Sheni is the problem to burn it B'Tuma, but not by Truma. We won't learn that from here. Me the Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua Nafka. We'll learn it out from what's the more famous Limud, about how do you know that you're allowed to use Truma Tmeya? Which is Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua, my dichtiv. What is meant in the pasuk? Vani hinei netati dechad mishmeret trumotai. Now I have given to you mishmeret, the guarding of trumotai. Trumotai there is written in plural, which is shtei trumot akot of midaver. The pasuk is talking about two trumot. It says here you have to guard this truma and guard that truma. What is this and that truma that you're speaking about over here? Achat truma teora vechat. Trumat Me'ah. That's to teach you that there is a necessity by Trumat Torah and Trumat Me'ah from our Rachman Olacha. It says that it's yours. Shelcha Te'ela Sakat Tachat Tavshucha. In fact, as Anitati Lacha, I gave you this. Mishmeret Trumotai, the Mishmeret of two types of Trumot. I gave it to you to be utilized. Trumat Torah, I know what you're utilizing it for. I know what you're doing with it. Trumat Me'ah, what are you doing with it? The puzzle tells you I've given you Trumat Me'ah. Why does it matter if you can't use Trumat Tmeah for anything? Why does it matter that I've given you the Trumat Tmeah? The reason it matters is because I can use it for something. What is that? I can burn it. So if that's the source for burning, or the ability to get Hana from burning Trumat Tmeah, then I don't need the word Mimenu that is used by Maser Sheni, Lo Biart Mimenu. That becomes extraneous. And now I have an extraneous Mimenu both by Maser Sheni and by Pesach. And allowing me to learn the Gzeir Shava, that just like Arel is Asur be Pesach, Arel is Asur be Maaser. So we have a conclusion here with regards to Arelut by Maaser, that at least according to Rabbi Akiva, who thinks there's an equation between Arel and Tumah, that Arel would be problematic. And Rabbi Yitzchak, who brings us this Gezer Shava, Mimenu Mimenu, at least according to him also, Maaser Sheni would be problematic with regards to an Arel. Right now the Gemara moves on to the next line in the Mishnah. We got through one thing in the Mishnah so far, which was Arel. Next thing is Arel v'chol atzmeim. That's the next thing in the Mishnah. Arel v'chol atzmeim lo yochlu b'truma, who are precluded from truma. So now we're up to v'chol atzmeim. Minahane mile. How do we know that atzmeim are problematic with regards to truma? Am Rabbi Yochan mishum Rabbi Yishmael amakra. So Rabbi Yochanan says, name Rabbi Yishmael, the pasuk says, ish mizera aron v'hu tzarua ozav. It means an individual from the descendants of Aaron, a Kohen, who is a tsarua or a zav, has tsarat, or he is a zav. So that means he is tamei. Ezo hu davar sheshaveh b'saro shel aron. Look, we know the pasuk's talking about tumah, but I don't know how the pasuk's talking about truma, because over there it uses the word kodashim. It says something that's holy, something that is unique to the kohanim, that if someone is tamei may not partake of it. How do you know that those psukim are speaking about truma? It does not explicitly say it's talking about truma. So that's the limud that Rabbi Yishmael says, that Ish ish mizeh Aaron, ezu davar sheshaveh bezero shel Aaron. What is something that all descendants of Aaron have equal opportunity in? Havi omer zu truma. That's truma. Any descendant of Aaron can eat truma, even women. The wife of the Kohen is entitled to truma. The daughters of the Kohen are entitled to truma. The sons of the Kohen. Then anybody who is a descendant of a Kohen is entitled to truma. Where it says, Veima b'chazeh b'shok. Why don't you say it's referencing to Kodshim Kalim, the matnot that come off of Kodshim Kalim, which are entitled to be eaten by the Kohen and his family. When it comes to Kodshei Kodashim, then it's only Zichrei Kuna, only male Kohenim can partake. But by Kodshim Kalim, when they get like the Chazen Shok, there's entitlement not only to the Kohen himself, but to his entire family. So that's a Davar Shaveh Lakol. So let's say that's the Parsha here. The Parsha is talking about Tumah by Kohen. In Kodashim, let's say that it's talking about Chazeh V'Shok and not Shumah. Mar says, Eina B'Chozeret. So it doesn't apply to someone who returns. If you remember, a Bat Kohen that marries Yisrael, she is precluded from partaking in Shumah anymore, as well as Chazeh V'Shok. If her husband passes away and she has no children, she's allowed to return to her father's house and eat Shumah. But when she returns to her father's house, she's allowed to eat Shumah, but she's not allowed to eat Chazeh B'Shok. We learned that in the last parak, that when she returns, she's only Chozeret for Shumah, she's not Chozeret for Chazeh B'Shok. So you see that it's not true. Not all descendants of Aaron are entitled to Chazeh B'Shok, because there's a woman, a Bat Kohen, who returns to her father's house, does not eat Chazeh B'Shok, even though she does eat Shumah. But it says, Truma Nami Eina B'Chalala. Truma also is precluded with regards to a Chalala. A woman who is Nit Chalala means that she's now been made Psula Lekuhuna, because of some Isur Kohen that is associated with her, a Bi'ah that makes her into a Chalala. She can't eat Truma either. That means even when she returns to her father's house, she can't eat Truma because now she's a Chalala. So you have a case where it's not Shaveh and all the descendants of Aaron. It says, Chalala lav zaro daroni. A Chalala is not considered to be zara daron. Now, you have to be careful about this because it's true by a Chalal as well. A Kohen Chalal is also not considered to be zaron. Now, I'm going to make a fine distinction here. That a chlala is considered to be zera, she is considered to be a descendant, but she's not considered to be zera aharon. She's not considered to be a kohenet. And that's a big distinction here, because we saw that earlier, that even a pasul, even someone who's pasul is considered to be zera with regards to the enabling of a mother to either eat truma or to be precluded from truma. It didn't matter if the zera was kasher or pasul. So, vis-a-vis that question, is this woman considered to be Zera? The answer is yes. But is she considered to be Zera Aaron? With regards to that question, the answer is no. Because a Chalala, and the same thing is true by a Chalal, a Kohen Chalal, is just not a Kohen. They lose their status or their consideration of being a Kohen or a Bat Kohen when they are a Chalal or a Chalala. They're still considered to be Zera, they're still descendants, they're still part of the family, but they lose the ability to be considered or classified like a Kohen. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here. That when this woman becomes a chlala, she's no longer a bat kohen. So you can't say this is something that shaveh is zaro shel aron, because she's no longer, quote unquote, zera aron. She's no longer considered to be a kohenet. She might be zera of the father that gave birth to her, or the mother that gave birth to her, but she's not zera aron. She does not carry the name of kohenet with her as being a bat kohen. It's simply true of the kohen chlala. So therefore, the item that is shaveh lakol here is truma. Even though, as Tosfo points out, if you have a woman who's married and has a child, then she is precluded from Truma. So you have cases like that. The answer Tosfo gives is, well, if the child dies, she does go back to Truma. So there is a manifestation, even with a woman has a child, that she can go back for Truma. There's a hurdle that she has to get over, which is that the children have to pass away. But there is a way that she could get back to eating Truma. All right, so now we have, Umimai Dahai Ada Sher Yitar Adika Herav Shemesh. How do you know here that the Pasuk, now that we've established, it's talking about Shuma. That's number one. Number two is, it says, Uva Shemesh Vitaher, that when the sun comes down, then Vitaher, how do we know that you require Erev Shemesh? Ema, the mighty Kapara. How do you know that its only requirement is Erev Shemesh? Maybe there is a requirement of Kapara. Now, it's clear here, if there is no Korban that is needed to be brought, that Erev Shemesh suffices, because it says, Uva Shemesh Vitaher. The Gemara's question is, in a situation in which the person, in order to become Tahor, not only has to go to the mikveh, not only has to have Erev Shemesh, but has to bring a korban, how do you know that you can eat Truma before you bring that korban? It's a good question of the Gemara, because We're in a situation where there is no need for korban. I understand that the pasuk says v'ashemesh v'taher, that that's the end of the line. So you're completely tahor. Of course you can eat truma. But in a case where you're not completely tahor, even though you pass the threshold of harem shemesh, because it's still mechuzik ra, how do you know you can eat truma?
Because the pasuk that we're using over here, ish ish mizer aron v'hu tzarua ozah b'kodoshim lo yochal ad asher yitar. It says until he becomes tahor, but it never defines for us what the term yitar means. So yitar could either mean harem shemesh, or yitar could be mechuzere kapara, until the kapara is brought. So how do you know for certain by truma that sunset is enough and you don't have to bring the korban in order to be permitted to participate in truma? Because the word, all it says here is yitar. What is called yitar?
So Gemara says, lo saka da'atcha de tana de bei Rabbi Shmuel. Because we have a tana de bei Rabbi Shmuel, b'zav bau shtei riyot, u'mitzara muskara katuv midaber. So now the Gemara says, well, you said before, it says here, ish ish mizaron v'hut tzarua ozav. That is a tzarua or a zav. What type of tzarua and what type of zav? As the Gemara has pointed out here, there are different types of zavin. There's a zav bal riachat, a zav who sees one riyah, who's the equivalent of a bal keri. Then there's a zav bal shtei riyot, which is he has two sightings, a zav. A zav that has two sightings is tamei for 7 days. Then on the seventh day he goes to the mikveh, and then on Harav Shemesh he is tahor. Then there's a zav bal shlosh riyot, he has three sightings. Then he is now required to have the seven days of Tumah. That's the Mishnah in Megillah. Ein bein zav bal shtei riyot, the zav bal shlosh riyot, elo korban. He has to bring a korban. He is a mechusrei kapara. So when it says here, ish ish mizer arom v'hu tzarua ozav, how do you know what type of tzarat or zav we're talking about here? Is this a zav bal shtei riyot or a zav bal shlosh riyot? Are we talking about a case where he is mechusrei kapara or he's not mechusrei kapara? That's one question. Same thing is true by a tzarua. By someone at Tzarat, you could be what's called a Mitzora Muzgar and a Mitzora Mukhlat. Mitzora Mukhlat is someone who the Kohen decided definitely has Tzarat, and now he has to go through the process of eliminating the Tzarat and becoming Tahor. That individual clearly has to bring Korbanot. A Mitzora Muzgar, someone who is sequestered or isolated to determine whether the Tzarat is Tamei, if he is then declared to be Tahor afterwards, he does not have to bring a korban. So now, what Tana de Rabbi Ishmael says here is, in that pasuk of Ish Ish, what is the tzarat and the zav that we're talking about? And that's what Tana de Rabbi Ishmael, b'zav bal shtei riyot, u'mitzara muzgara katuv b'demer, dumya t'tamei nefesh. Similar to a tamei nefesh, because tamei nefesh is also mentioned in that context of tuma. So he says, the zav and the tzarua that are mentioned there are zav and tzarua that equal tamei mate. What are a zav and a tzarua that equal to tamemate? Matzmei nefesh delav bar pekabarahu. Just like over there, we're talking about a tamemate, which clearly doesn't need a korban. Tamemate needs para duma, but he simply needs 7 days in order to be mitayer. He doesn't have to be a korban afterwards. Hachanami delav b'nei kapara ninu. So to over here, the pasuk's talking about a case where they're not b'nei kapara, they're not mechusrei kapara. It's talking about a zav who has two sightings, who only needs 7 days of tuma, not a korban. We're talking about a tzarat, that is a mitzorah muzgar, not a mukhlat, where he only requires the decoration of the kohen, but he doesn't need to bring a korban afterwards, as Rashi says, because he doesn't require tiglachat and tziporim, which are, again, there's also a mishnah in Megillah, ein bein, mitzorah muzgar, the mitzorah mukhlat, ela tiglachat v'tziporim, that you don't require to have his body shaved and to have the tziporim that they do outside the machaneh. And Rashi says, just like you don't have that, you don't have the korban that's associated with it. So Gemara says, okay, I accept what Rabbi Ishmael says. That the pasuk there, we know, is talking about a case where there's no mechusar kippurim. But, aval debar kapara, the mighty kapara. Why don't we say over there that, yes, you're right. The psukim over there are talking about cases that he's not a mechusar kapara. So since he's not a mechusar kapara, the taher that is mentioned over there is clearly the tara of Harav Shemesh. Okay, we've concluded that. It's not the Tara of Mechusrei Kapara, it's the Tara of Shemesh. Okay, but now let's just establish that that's true when the person doesn't have a requirement of Kapara. But if he has a requirement of Kapara, let us say that they have to wait for that. Vitu Adutnan, and also this Mishnah that says, Tavavala Ochel B'Maser. If he goes to the Mikveh, and he comes out of the Mikveh, he eats Maser Sheni, which is Tvoyom. Harev Shimsho, if the sun sets, Ochel B'Trumah. Then he can eat truma, that's Harav Shemesh. Hevi kapara, uchel b'kodoshim.
And if he brings kapara, meaning he brings his korban, he's allowed to eat kodashim minolon. So our question is twofold. Where's the source for this Mishnah to make the distinction between maser, truma, and kodashim? Which says maser requires just tful yom. Once you're tful yom, you can eat maser. Harav shemesh entitles you to truma. And then the only thing that's left out for bringing the korban or the kapara is kodashim. Otherwise, you can still eat truma. How do we know that? And again, that question is paired together with the question here, which is that the psukim in Parshat Emor that talk about tumata kohen and saying that he has to wait for Harav Shemesh in order to eat truma, maybe that's only in a case where the only necessity was Harav Shemesh. There was no korban there because we set up the whole case in a case where there is no need for a korban. But maybe in a case where there is a need for a korban, you should have to bring the korban in order to eat truma. So the question is twofold is, how do you know this? How do you know to distinguish and say that Harav Shemesh suffices by truma, and you don't need to get the korban in order to make you tahor? So Amar Rav, Amar Rav Chista, there are three psukim written with regards to tara mituma, and each one of them is going to reference a different item. Tiv, the pasuk says, "Velo yochal mina kodoshim ki imrechatz bisuro b'mayim." You're not allowed to eat the kodoshim until you go to the mikveh. Harachatz. From there, you would infer that if you went to the mikveh tahor, you're allowed to eat it. Uchtiv, and it says here by truma uva shemesh v'taher, says v'achar yochal mina kodoshim, that the sun will set. And then he'll be tahor, and then you'll be allowed to eat the kodashim. Uchtiv. And now there's a third pasuk, which is v'chiper aleh akwein v'tahera. So the first two are written in Parshat Emor. The last one is written in Parshat Tazria with regards to Yoledet. It says v'chiper aleh akwein, you'll bring the korban, v'tahera, and then she will be tahor. So now here you have three psukim that allow you to eat kodashim. One pasuk says, go to the mikveh, you can eat kodashim. One says, sun sets, you'll allowed to eat kodashim. And one says you bring your korban, you're allowed to eat kodashim. So which is it? So ha ketzad. How do you reconcile these three psukim? Kan b'maser, kan l'truma, kan l'kodashim. Maser only requires mikveh, truma requires harav shemesh, and kodashim require kapara. And that's how you explain the difference in these three psukim. Mar says v'ipuch ano. Flip it around. How do you know which belongs to which? Mar says mistavra truma adifa shukei machpaz. Truma makes more sense because truma is more chamura than maaser in that way. So therefore, you would make it the one that is more chamor. You'd say maaser only requires tful yom. Truma requires harav shemesh, and not the opposite, because truma is more chamura because of machpaz. We had this in yesterday's daf with regards to what is unique about truma. Mem is mita bidei shemayim, as opposed to maaser sheni. We have the zayin, which was zarim, that zarim are precluded from truma. That's not true by maaser sheni. We have pidyon, but you're not allowed to redeem truma, whereas you're allowed to redeem maisu sheni. And we have chet, which is chomesh, that you have to pay. If you eat a bishogeg, you have to pay a chomesh by truma. You don't have that by maisu sheni. So here you have these four items that make truma more chamura. Where it says, adarabba maser adifa shekein hadas tav, that maser sheni has chumrot associated with it as well, which are these five chumrot, which are hadas tav. Hey is havat makom. You have to bring it up to Yerushalayim. Dalit is vidui, requires a vidui maser. Samech is it's a sword to an onain. And tet is tuma, that there's a problem of lo biartimi menu bitame, meaning that you're not allowed to consume a tame maser sheni, which is as opposed to truma tameya, which you can burn. And bet is biur. There's a requirement of biur by maser sheni. There's no requirement of biur by truma. Where it says, afilachi mita adifa. Even so, even though there are even more items by Maaser Sheni, the fact that there's a chiyuv mita bidei shemayim by truma already tells you that that is more chamor. That's a more serious issue. Rav Amar belo mita adifa nami lo matzit amart. Even without mita adifa, you could also not say that maser goes before truma. Amar kra nefesh. Ezu davar sheshaveh b'chol nefesh. Where the pasuk says, by the pasuk that says all you have to do is go to the mikveh, it says, by kiyim rechatz b'sero b'mayim, it says, nefesh ki tigabo. There it says, nefesh. And so what Rava says is, yesu davar sheshaveh b'chol nefesh, what's something that everybody can partake of? Av yomer is the maser. That's maser. Maaser sheni is the only thing that can be eaten by everybody, as opposed to truma, that can only be eaten by kohanim and kodashim, where, yes, sometimes people can eat it by kodashim kalim, but other kodashim can only be eaten by the zichrei kehuna. Let us again still say that you're right. We like how you set up the psukim And you're right. You need to be Tvor Yom Tid Maser. You need Erev Shemesh for Truma. You need Mechusarei Kapara for Kodashim. But let's say that that's only true when there is no need for Kapara. Halahecha Dabar Kapara, the mighty Kapara. But if you do require a Korban, maybe by Truma, you still have to wait to pass over the Korpara. Amar Abaye, Trei Krai Ktiv, Ebi Yoledet. There are two psukim by Yoledet. Tiv, Ad Malot, Yemei Tahara, until she completes her days of Tahara. Kevin Shemalu Yemei Tahara. So that once she is finished off her days of Tahara, or days of whatever she has to count, she's Tahara automatically. Uchtiv, Yechiper Alei HaKohen, V'Tahara. We also have the pasuk that we quoted before, which is after the Kapara, she is Tahara. So the words Yemei Tahara are extraneous, unnecessary, because of course, Ad Yemalot is Yemei Tahara. So why is it Yemei Tahara? It sounds like there's something that she becomes Tahor at the completion of her series of days. We know that by Yoledet, she has to wait 40 days by a Zachar and 80 days by a Nekeva. She could wait 7 days of Tumah by a Zachar, goes to the Mikveh on the 7th day, and then she becomes what's called a Tvulat Yom Aruch. She becomes a Tvul Yom from then until the 40th day. On the sunset on the 40th day, she becomes Tahor, because that's Yemalot Yemei Tahara. That's the end of her days of Tahara. Same thing with regards to a Nekeva. 80 days by the Nekeva, 2 weeks she's Tmeah. On the 14th day, she goes to the Mikveh. Then she's at Tfulat Yom Aruch until the 80th day. When the sun sets on the 80th day, she's again Tahor. So that fact that there's a Tahara that comes at the sunset on the 80th day or on the 40th day shows you that some sort of Tahara is achieved at that point in time, irrespective of the fact that she has to bring a Korban on day 41 or day 81. So you see there's a Tahara independent of the Korban. And there's a Tahara that's associated with the Korban. HaKetzad. How do you reconcile that? Kan l'truma, kan l'kodashim. By truma, she's Tahara once the sun sets on the 40th or 80th day. She only can eat kodashim after she brings her Korban on the 41st or the 81st day. Where it says, v'ipochana. How do you know that it's that way? Flip them around and say that truma needs the Korban and kodashim would need Erev Shemesh. Where it says, mistava kodesh chamur. Kodesh is more chamur, shekein pan ka'achas. Is it what we saw yesterday? That it has this above Truma, which is Pankachas, which we saw we're referencing Pigol, Notar, Korban, Mi'ilah, Karet, Basur Leonein. So those are the items that apply by Kodoshim that are not true by Truma. Mar says, Adarabah, Truma Chamura. Truma is more Chamur, Shekei Machpaz, which we saw before. Mar says, Hanach Nefishan. There, here we have a quantitative measure, which is, in the case of Korban, you have 6. And by Truma, you only have 4. So that makes Kodoshim more chamur. Rav Amar, like we've seen before, below Hanach, Nefisha, no Matzid Amart. Even without the quantitative measure, you could also not say it. Amar Kra, v'chiper ala akwein, v'tahera. It says that he will be mechaperon and then she'll be Torah. Michlau, she eats meya. That implies that she has some tingling of Tuma associated with her. V'isak adatcha b'kodoshim. If you're talking about Kodoshim, ikre kan, v'basar she'iga b'chotamei, lo yeachel. It says that when any tuma that comes into contact with kodashim, you're not allowed to eat. So here, if you say that you have a tingling of tuma left in you before you bring the korban, that means that you have some semblance of tuma. That semblance of tuma is going to preclude your ability to eat the kodashim. Because basar shein gabu chol tamei, if any basar kodashim comes into contact with someone who's tamei, it's tamei. And then you can't eat it. So the fact that you could eat the kodashim means that you must be tahor legamre. And the fact that Erev Shemesh doesn't get you to Tahara Legamre, it must mean that the second pasuk that's talking about Kapara is talking about Kodashim, whether you're completely Tahor, whereas the partial Tahara is talking about Truma, because there we don't have such a pasuk that says you can't eat it. El Shema Mina, Bitruma. It must be that we're talking about Truma by Erev Shemesh. And now we've proven that Erev Shemesh works by Truma, whether there is a need for Kapara or not a need for Kapara. Erev Shemesh is the end of the line and you can eat Truma after the sun sets. Doesn't matter whether you have to bring a Korban on the next day or not in order to be completely Tahor. Matik v'la Rav Shisha Brei Darvidi. Truma tiva hocha. Can you really say that the Parsha here is talking about Truma? That the Ad Melot Tahara by the Yoledet is referencing Truma and not referencing Kodoshim? And that's how we resolve the inconsistency in the psukim there by Yoledet. Can you really say that? Vatanya, Daber el Bnei Yisrael. Speak to Bnei Yisrael. Ainli elo Bnei Yisrael. Giyoret v'shivcha mishuchreret minayin. I only know about Bnei Yisrael. How do I know about a convert or a shivcha knanit that has been freed? Talmud Lomar, Isha. a woman. V'isakadatcha b'truma, if you say this parsha is talking about truma, giyoret v'shivcha b'not mechal truma ninu, since when does a giyoret or a shivcha knanit partake in truma? They're precluded from truma. They're either precluded because they're not a bat kohen, and even if they marry a kohen, they have a problem because a giyoret and shivcha has the status of zona, according to most. We've discussed before what the problem of a kohen marrying a giyoret is. But either way, he can't marry a giyoret, he can't marry a shivcha knanit, and that would not entitle them to truma, because they are psulot likuna. So, amarava velo, anat, vahakti b'chol kodesh lo tiga, l'rabota truma. So it says that b'chol kodesh you may not touch or come into contact with, l'rabota truma. So we see there that the parsha there is definitely talking about truma, even though it says b'chol kodesh lo tiga. So we know for sure it's talking about truma. So Gemara says, Elakra mili mile kechoshiv, that the psukim over here are really broken down or segregated. Even though in the same pasuk we're talking about inclusions of giorit and shifra kananit, and we're talking about truma, which aren't relevant one to the other, nevertheless, the fact that it says, b'chodesh lo kodosh do tigalar b'vota truma, we see that the pasuk has certain aspects to deal with truma, and certain aspects that don't deal with truma. So that's not going to dissuade us from believing that that parshiata is talking about truma, even though there are parts of the parsha where we have drashot that aren't relevant to truma. So sections of it won't be talking about truma. Sections of it will be talking about truma. And that doesn't dissuade us because we know, even without our drasha here, that we're talking about truma, there is clearly, we have two different brightot here. One brightot that's talking about a shivcha kananit and a giorit, and another brightot that's saying that that parsha is talking about truma. So we even already have brightot saying the same thing, that this is truma and this is not truma. So just the fact that we add on another aspect of truma here is not going to convince us that that's not the way, because it's clear here that these psukim are dealing with multiple items, not just truma. It's dealing with kodesh, it's dealing with truma, it's dealing with different aspects of kodesh. So yes, in the case where it's dealing with truma, it's telling us that heres shemesh suffices. The other part of the pasuk, that might be dealing with something else, not truma, and we're fine with that. We are settled with that because we already have that problem from other brightot. Okay, we'll stop here. Three lines down on the top of Ayin Hei Amud Aleph, where the Gemara now is going to discuss why we have so many psukim by truma and kodeshim in tomorrow's daf.